Welcome to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California. My name is Dan Yassin, and I'm an anti-war activist. Mike Rhodes is at the control. Today is July 15th, 2015, third Wednesday of the month. Every third Wednesday from 3 to 3:30 p.m., I interview authors, scholars, bloggers, columnists, and activists who'll help us look at our world through the prism of American imperialism. On the show, we talk about U.S. foreign and domestic policies and the actions of the military-industrial security complex. These actions have severe consequences for people all over the world. To create a better, humane, and a compassionate world, we must first understand what is being done in our name and always be willing to stand up, speak out, and speak truth to empire. Today we have Jeff Brown on telephone with us. Hello, Jeff.
Yes. Hello, Dan. Welcome from Beijing, China.
Thank you for being my guest on Speaking Truth to Empire. Jeff Brown, an author and blogger who currently lives in China, a suburb of Beijing. Jeff grew up in Oklahoma and has lived in Brazil, Middle East, Africa, and France. In 2012, he took a solo trip through China for 44 days and wrote a book, 44 Days Backpacking in China. His website is www.44days.net. Jeff, you have described the process of your de-brainwashing from the Western propaganda. I know many people, including myself, who have gone through this de-brainwashing like you have. Well, you grew up in Oklahoma, and now you are living in a suburb of Beijing. Give us a summary of your journey.
I joined the Peace Corps in 1980 to 1982, and that's where I learned fluent Arabic. And all from the 1980s, the 1990s, even going back to the States from 2001 to 2009. I had a funny feeling that things were just not right, that the system was just out of whack. But it was finally, coming back here and taking my journey across China, although I'd already been to, many of the provinces here when I lived here for 7 years in the 1990s. But it was the discovery of, seeing China and how it had developed and evolved and improved versus all of the incredible, anti-Communist Party propaganda back in the States, the virtual black hole of what was really happening over here. And then I just started doing a lot of research, over the last 5 years that we've been back, thousands and thousands of hours of research. And I realize most people don't have time to do that. But what I've come to the conclusion is that America and the West is a vast, worldwide empire. It's been going on for 500 years. It's traded hands, the Dutch, the French, the British, and now the Americans. And that fascism and capitalism and empire are, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, if I'm not being sacrilegious, of resource extraction and exploitation of 85% of the world's people who happen to be, dark-skinned and are sitting on a lot of valuable resources. And I realized, recently, I think it was the Charlie Hebdo false flag, that's what really just kind of pushed me over the edge, as I realized, 9/11, I did all this research, and it's absolutely bulletproof. 9/11 was a false flag. Charlie Hebdo was a false flag. The Boston Marathon bombing was a false flag. And I just realized, our governments, our Western governments, we were so brainwashed as children, that we're the beacon on the hill, moral righteousness, moral superiority over the rest of the world. But it's a lie. I mean, we do not. Our governments are extremely evil and extremely power hungry, and they've killed millions and millions and millions and millions of people in the process.
After leaving, I mean, you arrived in China the second time, as you said in your first question, that you were there 90 to 97, and then you lived in U.S. from 2001 to 2009 and 2010. You went back to China, and you
yes.
you said you wrote in one of your blog that you had pretty much given up on U.S. at that time, but you still had some hope in European democratic socialism.
Democratic socialism. You know, my wife is French, and I found out a couple of years after we got married that because I married a French woman that I could get French nationality. And I, you know, this actually was in China in 1990. We got married in 88 when I was living in Algeria. And so I got a French passport, and I was very proud of that. And because I mean, even in 1990, I mean, I knew things were not working well in the United States. I knew things were a bit out of whack, but I still held, you know, Europe up a bit on a pedestal, that it was somehow different than the United States. And I remember, you know, I voted for Hollande, you know, because François Hollande, you know, for the 2012 presidential election as a socialist, and you know, he's not a socialist. He's a right winger like everybody else. But what really pushed me over the edge about, you know, the hypocrisy and the falsity of democratic socialism in Europe is the Ukraine. I mean, Europe is allowing fascism and Nazis to run a country in Eastern Europe, and that's the Ukraine. And I sat there just mesmerized, and I mean, in a very bad way, sort of mesmerized, you know, with disgust at what evolved, you know, starting in, you know, in 2014, you know, the Maidan and then the Odessa genocide, and this is all being perpetrated by the United States. And what really upsets me about Europe is that if Merkel or Hollande would just stand up and say enough is enough, you know, and we're not going to lick, you know, the United States' boots anymore, and we're going to have our own foreign policy, and we're going to do what's in our best interest, you know, it would all come undone. But they are just as much a part of the, you know, the they're just pawns in the same, you know, Western empire, you know, that spans the globe, and none of them are going to. I mean, they've been spied on; they're being spied on, and they still take it. So I've not only have given up on America, I've now given up on Western Europe. I've given up on the West. I mean, I found out, you know, that in 1975. Gough Whitlam was overthrown. The Prime Minister of Australia was overthrown by the CIA and MI6. I mean, I just, you know, Australia, New Zealand, it's the whole Western world is absolutely debased and evil. And we've got Russia, and we've got China and BRICS, and we've got, you know, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and the Non-Aligned Movement and ALBA and CELAC in Latin America. And all we can do, I mean, this is the battle royale of the 21st century. I mean, one of these sides is going to win, and if the West wins, we're going to all be basically living in servitude and fascism, and we can only hope that, you know, that the BRICS and the Shanghai, you know, Cooperation Organization and ALBA and CELAC can be victorious over, you know, the Conradian, you know, heart of darkness of the West.
See, this time, which is the second time for you in China, you found major changes that have happened in China under President Xi Jinping. Most people in the West, and particularly in the U.S., know very little about him. Tell us about him and how China has changed under his leadership.
I am writing his diaries. This is my my fourth book, and I'm gonna I'm pretending that I'm Xi Jinping and I'm writing his diaries. I'm calling it Red Letters, the diaries or the memoirs of Xi Jinping. And so I've been doing, you know, I've got massive amount of research on him, and he's an amazing man. He's one of the best read, learned world leaders today. He's read all the Greek classics, the English classics, the German classics, the Spanish classics. It just goes on and on and on. He's read all of the Chinese classics. You know, came from a privileged family. His father was a revolutionary in the Communist Party. Worked side by side with Mao Zedong back in the 30s, 40s, all the way up into the 60s. And Xi Jinping took that privileged lifestyle that he had, and then during the Cultural Revolution for 7 years, he went to one of the poorest areas in China at that time, actually where his father worked to help Mao after the long in Shanxi, and lived with peasants and fleas and lice and, you know, no shoes, and, you know, just, you know, lived like a common peasant, you know, for 7 years. Had an epiphany there, and you know, there are very, very few world leaders that have gone through what he has gone through. So he has seen the privilege of you know, having a father who's a revolutionary hero in the People's Liberation Army, and he has seen how the the peasants were living, but he also knows what it was like before liberation, you know, before 1949, and that, you know, when China was a hellhole and being raped and plundered by, you know, by the Western powers, you know, colonialism and the Japanese. He has great vision. He has great empathy. He is an amazing judge of people. He's not charismatic in, you know, the sort of Ronald Reagan, you know, sense. He's charismatic in the sense that people trust him. The Chinese love him. You know, we live in a Chinese neighborhood. I speak fluent Chinese, and I talk to him all the time, and they like him, and they really respect what he's trying to do here. He is attacking corruption. Although the West is, I think, even more corrupt, is much more corrupt than here. He is attacking corruption, and I mean going after it in a big way, because he truly believes in the Chinese Communist Party of China, of this country. His wife is a committed communist. They were both, you know, they're both PLA soldiers, and he's an amazing guy, and I think my diaries are going to reflect that. And he's also very media savvy. This is something that the West is having a hard time dealing with. He knows how to use the media in his favor and in China's favor. And what I call, you know, the Great Western Firewall, behind the Great Western Firewall, I mean, China's almost, you know, a non-entity. It's evil. It's, you know, it's trying to take over the Pacific. It's trying to, you know, become a world, you know, dominator like the United States. But around the outside of the Great Western Firewall, he is actually very well liked and very well admired around the world.
You are listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California. We are speaking with author and blogger Jeff Brown, who is in China. BRICS countries, you had mentioned BRICS earlier. BRICS countries just met on their annual summit in Russian city Ufa. There was a complete blackout of any news in the U.S. media. Majority of the Americans are completely ignorant about BRICS. What is BRICS and why is it important in shaping the future of our world?
Yes, BRICS is an affiliation of five countries: Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. It had its first meeting in 2009. The West would like to pretend that it doesn't exist because it does represent one-third of the world's landmass. It represents 40% of the world's people. It represents one-fifth of the world's gross domestic product. And it has $4 trillion, over $4 trillion in foreign reserves, which is unfortunately mostly American Treasury debt. But it is a very powerful and eclectic group. They just, at this meeting in Ufa, Russia, and I agree with you, I wrote an article for the Greenville Post about exactly about this, and it will hopefully come out in this next week about the blackout. And they met, and they had already started. They had done a charter for the New Development Bank, the NDB, and they just seeded it with $50 billion worth of in capital, which is going to rival, you know, the IMF and the World Bank. So it is a force to be reckoned with, and that is why nobody behind the Great Western Firewall ever hears about it, because it is a force to be reckoned with. And empire never wants to admit or accept the fact that it can and or is being challenged, and BRICS is definitely doing it. At the same time, in Ufa, Russia, there was the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. This is more strategic. This is more tactical. It represents China and Russia, and then the stands. You know, Uzbekistan, mm-hmm. Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, etc. So this is a group, the SCO or SCO. So the summit was actually called SCO BRICS, and that is more along the lines of integrating the Eurasian continent. And right now, China and Russia, you know, China has its Silk Roads, massive Silk Roads infrastructure development plan for Asia, going all the way from, you know, Singapore all the way to Lisbon in Portugal. And then Russia has its Eurasian Economic Union, which is basically all of the SCO countries except China. So Putin and Xi, they like each other, they respect each other. They've met like 13 times in the last 2 years, and they're trying to coordinate. They're trying to harmonize. They're trying to harmonize the goals of the Eurasian Union, and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and then of course tying in the BRICS and the New Development Bank there.
Under the leadership of President Barack Obama, U.S. has done everything possible to alienate and antagonize both China and Russia simultaneously. Tell us your view in this regard, and what are the consequences of this U.S. policy?
I don't even think it's leadership. I think since Harry Truman, I mean, I think even going back to Andrew Jackson, you read Andrew Jackson trying to control, you know, trying to take down, you know, the banks, the big national banks, and you read the letters of, you know, FDR saying that, you know, the banks are running everything. You know, Napoleon had the same problem. And I think especially since Truman, you know, created the CIA, I don't think we've had a president that's really been in power. And the only one that has really been in power and tried to actually change things, John F. Kennedy, they murdered him. They assassinated him in a coup d'etat on Dealey Square in 1963. So I don't think, to be honest with you, I think Obama is nothing more than just a set piece, you know, on. And the deep state is really running the country, the NSA, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the big banks. Obama's just window dressing, and I think that's been true with Bush and Clinton and going all the way back. You know, you look at someone like, you know, Jimmy Carter, who tried to do some good things and, you know, didn't kill anybody. And during his administration, his reputation has been trashed, even though he's a good man. So, but anyway, the deep state behind Obama, yes, they are deeply, deeply frightened by this double helix, you know, almost like the melding of DNA between Russia and China. And as I just said, Xi and Putin have met 13 times in the last 2 years. And they are going to meet again on September 3rd for the 70th anniversary of China's defeat of world fascism and Japanese aggression when Putin comes to the big parade on Tiananmen Square. You know, the West has no answer to these two colossal countries. And the difference now is that, you know, 50 years ago, China didn't have any money, Russia didn't have much money, and they were completely ostracized from the economic, world order because they were communist countries and they were shut out. And, of course, they had to, you know, fend for themselves within their own, communist bloc countries. But now, you know, BRICS and SCO, and now they have something that they have never had in 500 years of Western imperialism. And that is, they're organized, you know, with BRICS and NAM and SCO, CELAC and ALBA and et cetera, and SCO. And, but they've also billions and billions and billions of dollars. And so this is something that the West has never had to deal with. And so they are just, I mean, it's like a wounded lion, you know, the West, you know, lashing out against China, you know, with the pivot to Asia and the Ukraine. I mean, they are desperate. I mean, they realize that if China and Russia continue to align themselves, and if they, you know, especially if India gets involved, I forgot to mention, but, you know, countries like, you know, there's a bunch of countries that want to join SCO, Iran and, you know, Turkey and Indonesia want to join BRICS. And so there's this growing alliance of non-Western, you know, the dark-skinned people of the world, who I call the moral majority, are slowly coalescing in a phalanx against, you know, 500 years of genocide dominance and extraction and exploitation. And the difference is they've got tons of money to do it, and so. This is it. I mean, it's down to basically China are at the head of the, or leading the charge, and all these other countries, and you can, and in Latin America, Venezuela, Ecuador, you know, Argentina, they're leading the fight in Latin America, in Africa, you know, Eritrea, and you know, South Africa is trying to stand up against West Empire. So it is going to decide the 21st century, and the United States will continue to try to destabilize China, continue to try to balkanize it. They have been since 1949, when China was liberated from West enslavement, and they've been trying to destabilize Russia, you know, since Napoleon. You know, in the early 1800s, so they, you know, the West hates Russia, and they have for, you know, centuries. So it's exciting times, and I feel like living here in Beijing and speaking Chinese, I can really get, you know, feel the pulse of the place, and I can feel the gravity of influence and power shifting from Washington and London and Paris and Brussels, slowly, you know, ebbing towards, you know, Moscow and Beijing.
Jeff, I guess we have a couple of minutes, so give us your view, this push that as you said, it's coming from deep state, not from Obama. I think this can easily lead to World War III, which will definitely going to be nuclear. And I see China and Russia are not being confrontational, their emphasis really to economic growth and financial system. So give us your view on that. It's just, I don't understand why your U.S. is pushing
well,
so hard.
Well, World War III, you know, if I feel like if it's going to go nuclear, the first country that's going to launch weapons is Israel. Yeah. I mean, that country is deranged. And, you know, the way that they, you know, genocide of the Palestinians and the, you know, I mean, Gaza is the largest open air, you know, in the world. And, you know, and, but, you know, they're sort of like South Africa back in the 1970s and 1980s, you know, the Israel is surrounded by, you know, hundreds of millions of Muslims, and they have basically, you know, treated the Palestinians like animals, worse than animals. And so, and they've got 200 or 300 undeclared nuclear weapons. So I think if Israel will lash out and, you know, bomb Iran, and so that's where I feel like, you know, nuclear might start. But, you know, the United States and Europe and Israel are like, you know, they work hand in hand to wreak havoc and misery and across the planet. But I feel like, you know, that Israel is probably the weak link.
Yeah. I guess it's about time to wrap it up. And I has already said that your website is 44days.net. You have a lot of information. People can get your book. That sounds like a great book, 44 Days Backpacking in China. And you have other couple of other books, and you just mentioned your book, Diaries of...
Yeah, I'm putting out an e-book hopefully next month, which is an anthology of all of my articles, columns from about the last year and a half. And hopefully that will be out next month, and that will be available, you know, and on, you know, Kindle and Nook and on my website also.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Looking forward to hearing the interview.
Until next
time. Halfway around the world.
Thank you. You have been listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California. We were speaking with author of 44 Days Backpacking in China. Thank you for listening. I will be back third Wednesday of August.